Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham. Joining me this evening, we've got Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Hello.
No Matt Knight this evening. So
thank heavens.
Yes. We're doing it proper live and that. No internet. Well, you know, just us in a room. There's no internet.
It's still pre-recorded.
It's nice not having to wear headphones, isn't it, Joe?
I do, yeah, it is.
I still have to wear headphones.
No, I quite like not wearing headphones. Maybe can we just
sack off Matt.
Yeah.
Just get rid of him.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Good.
Jay Cross joining us after, 2 weeks off?
2 weeks away, yeah, sorry.
Two weeks in Amoebica?
It didn't work out that I was here for... No, I was only away for a week and a bit. But I flew out on the Monday, two Mondays ago.
Took for a drink.
On Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I fell asleep really early on Wednesday.
Cool.
Yeah.
How was America?
Yeah, it was really good. It was really, really good, actually. I went to the Martin factory.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. I wrote the podcast notes out with... I mean, there is some quite big news where you're concerned.
Yeah.
I completely forgot that you actually did do something guitar-related.
I did something really guitar-y. I went to... So, my girlfriend lives just outside of Philadelphia.
The cheese,
just outside of, it makes our relationship quite difficult with me being staunchly vegan. Yeah. You know, you have to keep arm's length.
Yeah. Well, that's why she lives outside of the cheese.
Yeah, just outside. It's like the event horizon.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
I don't really know what's going on here. Speaking of event horizons, I watched on the flight, more
event
importantly.
Horizon.
No, not that. I watched Interstellar again on the flight on the way.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen it.
Yeah, how have you not seen it?
It's exactly the same as Event Horizon, only without Sam Neill.
Okay. I don't think I've ever seen Event Horizon.
Who else is in that?
What, in Event Horizon?
Yeah.
Sam Neill is the only one I remember.
No, there's someone else.
Yeah, Morpheus?
Lawrence Fishburne's in it.
No, Fishburne's the place with the Roman villa, not too far
Fishburne's
from here.
Roman palace.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been there.
Fishburne.
Yeah,
that's where the thing is, but his name is Lawrence Fishburne. Fishburne.
Anyway, so I went to the Martin factory, which is in Nazareth, which is about 10 miles from Bethlehem.
I was about to do this.
It is, actually. It is, but there's a Bethlehem,
is there?
Pennsylvania.
Oh,
yeah,
that's awful. There's only America could do that.
Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and Nazareth, Pennsylvania. Bethlehem, we went to Bethlehem shortly after because there is an excellent vegan bakery there.
Wow.
But in Nazareth.
Really tip-top stables.
Yeah, really good.
Stable diet.
Why?
Carry on.
Anyway, CF Martin moved. I found out loads about Martin, and it was really, really interesting. I kind of hadn't really clicked with me just how old that company is.
Yeah.
So CF Martin.
It says it on all of the guitars.
I know it does, but I guess I've just never really. It's difficult when you put these things in perspective. So the company was formed in, I think it's 1833, was when he built his first guitar. Orville Gibson wasn't even born until the mid-50s. The mid-1850s.
Oh, I thought you meant the 1950s.
No, the mid-1850s.
Crafted his first guitar at 1 year old.
So that puts things in perspective. He was building... C.F. Martin was building guitars 20 years before the person that you kind of think of when you think of, you know, big acoustic guitars wasn't even born yet.
Yeah.
But it was really, really interesting. You can do a tour. The tour's free. I'd highly, highly recommend that if ever you're in the northeast of the US that you go. Nazareth is about an hour and a half or so, probably about 2 hours north of Philadelphia, and about the same distance west of New York. So it's actually very easy to get to.
Okay.
And the tour is free. You just show up on the day, as well as doing a tour of the factory. So you go around and you see like the production line, you see where they treat the woods, you see the custom shop. They tell you all about like the history of it, and then when you're done, there's a museum which has got some of their real like choice pieces in there, and some of the stuff that they had in there was just absolutely phenomenal, just absolutely incredible. You know, that from the sort of the stuff that you consider kind of modern classics, like they had Kurt Cobain's guitar that he used on the Unplugged record.
That's cool.
They had the 1 millionth guitar that Martin ever produced.
That's insane.
Do you know what year they made their 1 millionth guitar?
I think it was like 2004,
really?
Or something. Yeah, it's fairly late. Recently.
Takes you a while to get there, I'd imagine.
I imagine so. They're so prolific. I just wondered if it had been earlier.
And well, I mean, I think it's only in sort of recent years that they've really sort of, you know, built up the traction where they're doing, you know, loads and loads and loads. I mean, they said that. So there's two factories. There's the factory in Nazareth, which is about... So when C.F. Martin moved to the United States, he moved to New York.
Where was he from originally?
I think Germany.
Okay.
And they moved from New York to Nazareth. And then the company existed for a little while. And then maybe like 5 or 10 years afterwards or something, they moved to the current... site.
Okay.
So you could go visit. Actually, I think it was more than 5 or 10 years. But anyway, they moved from the original factory to this big factory, and they've been there ever since. And it's really really cool. The museum was just absolutely incredible, and I found out quite a lot of really cool stuff. Like one of the things that really struck me was they had a 0018 in there from it was a 1942 0018 that was owned by a guy called Fred Clay. Who I didn't know anything
about. I know the name, yeah.
He's like a country western guy. I tried to do some Googling on him and I couldn't find anything about him.
Clay.
Fred Clay. And
Bill Clay.
I don't know what that is.
It's from Die Hard. Anyway, go on.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. It's Rickman, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, so Fred Clay, he had this 0018 and he was playing like country western songs, and he was like, the problem is with this guitar is... like it's not loud enough. People can't hear me over the sound of everything. So, in 1943 or 44, I think it was, he took it to his mate's radio repair shop and went, Leo, this guitar's not loud enough. Do you reckon you can do anything about it? And his mate Leo went, yeah, let me see what I can do. And that is the first example of Leo Fender working out how to amplify a stringed instrument, a fretted instrument.
There we go. That
is mental.
So the first Fender guitar was a Martin.
Yeah.
Weird. What was the oldest guitar in there?
The oldest guitar was, they had one of the first instruments that C.F. Martin ever made, which was a weird sort of... Like the headstock was amazing.
Thing.
It kind of, but it was a guitar. It was an acoustic guitar, and it was from 1834.
My God, you don't even think about acoustic guitars really around that time period being an especially produced item.
Yeah, they were playing Flying V's and stuff.
Yeah.
No, I know what you mean.
It's the year of the Variax, 1834.
But yeah, so it's from 1834.
Wow.
They also had a they have Richard Gere's, one of Richard Gere's Martins.
Oh yeah,
he donated one. And there was one, I think it was a D28, I think it was, that that survived Normandy. A fella had it with him during Normandy, and it survived. And they were like, oh, amazing, so it's now in the Martin Museum. It was just a simply incredible place to be. That really, really amazing. Really, really exciting. Really
did
cool.
They at all talk about the Mexican-made guitars?
Yeah, a little bit. So there's the two factories. So there's that one in in Nazareth, where they finish around 300 guitars a day.
Okay.
They reckon 3 to 325, something like that.
It sounds like a lot, but it's not a lot compared to a lot of other manufacturers.
Well, I mean, when I went to the USA Gibson factory in Nashville, yeah, they reckon that they were finishing 600 guitars yeah a day there. You know, that's you know, half that amount. But you don't, do you think of Martin as sort of half as popular as Gibson?
I guess, or, you know, the difference is that they're niche, only manufacturing acoustic guitars.
Yeah,
and I guess acoustics probably take a bit more work to.
They certainly did from start to finish at Martin. They yeah reckon that they, I think they said it was, I think they said 8 weeks from start to finish to make a guitar.
Okay,
and all
that's
of,
a long time, isn't it?
And all of the guitars on the factory floor are sold already. Like probably right sold to, they'll be sold to you know, distributors yeah, or they'll be sold to guitar centres or whatever. But if they're being made, they're already accounted for. But yeah, 8 weeks they reckon for their. Whereas Gibson, they reckoned, I think it was 4 to 5.
Okay. For acoustics.
I didn't go to the acoustic factory for the electrics.
Oh, you went to
the
electrics. Yeah.
But that was really amazing. There was another point that I had, and I can't remember.
Mexican factory
in Navajo, which is just is in like very northern Mexico. Yeah. They make their anything that's got the L suffix, so the LX series, yep, and the Ed Sheeran guitars, and also the Backpacker series, and they reckon that they finish about 600 of those a day.
Wow.
So Martin,
that's because they're smaller.
It's because they're smaller. Yeah, yeah. They're just further away.
Yeah. Takes half as long because yeah, they're like half
that's,
size.
That's exactly how it works. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no, they reckon they finish 600 guitars a day out of Navajo. So Martin essentially are producing close to 1,000 guitars every single day.
And they're all sold.
And they're all already sold.
The LX1s mm-hmm and the, not so much the Ed Sheeran stuff, but the LX1s were out of stock for like,
oh, when they announced them to begin with.
They were out of stock for like 2 years.
It was, oh, it was, I don't think it was quite 2 years, but it was months and months yeah and months. And, you know, you think about knowing how many guitars they're finishing each day. And it simply came down to the fact that there weren't any coming, to begin with, there weren't any coming into Europe. They would say that, like, the supplier, the UK supplier, were being told, right, you're getting this many, you're getting on this day. And then all of a sudden they were told, actually, we can't keep up with the demand in the US, so you can't have those. That's yeah that's what was happening, is that they were prioritising demand in the US, which to a certain degree you can kind of understand because it's their core market, and apart from anything, it costs them less.
It's easier to ship the guitars around.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's amazing. The X bracing was pioneered by CF Martin.
Yep.
He was the first person to, I think, standardise having the joint at the 12th fret, but also like pushed it further yep up as well, 13th and 14th, and yeah, it was a pretty incredible experience.
Am I imagining it, or did I see a picture of you in a giant guitar?
Not me in a giant, but I took a picture of, it was, I think, the 100 and, for, I think it was for the 105th, what would it have been? It was some anniversary, maybe the 175th anniversary or okay 150th anniversary. It was for one of the anniversaries, the people in the factory, on their own time, produced a scaled up, what am I trying to say?
What's the full scale, but
scaled up,
like scaled
version,
correct, basically,
of one of their guitars that was like, I don't know, 30 foot long or something like that, and it was only half enclosed, so you could see the bracing and everything right inside.
Was that the point of it? Just so you could see?
Yeah,
what
I think
looked
so.
Like.
Yeah. But that was really cool. Just wicked. It was really really good, really exciting, and I just want to go to California now. I want to go Fender. I want to go Taylor.
Guitar Nerds road trip.
Yeah. So maybe we should, you know, an easy one that we could go Milton Keynes.
Do some C. Marshall.
Yeah. Maybe we should do that.
Let's go to Laney. I hate Milton Keynes.
Laney. I've been up there. We went up there, didn't we?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been there. Oh, yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah. Laney's good. It's amazing how much stuff they actually still just build there. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Who else could we visit? Other British...
Bigfoot.
Yeah, let's go to Reese's house. Just go to the Dun Horse and just have a beer and talk about Bigfoot pedals. Now, a tragedy has befallen you while you've been away, seemingly. You've lost something.
I can't find my RE20. I can't find my Space Echo.
Okay. When I heard that you'd lost your Space Echo. How do you lose a 4U rack mounted?
No, not the rack mounted one, the pedal. I can't find it anywhere.
I know you lend a lot of stuff out, but would you have really lent the Space Echo out?
So the reason that Martin knows this is I posted something up on Facebook just saying, and I was really reluctant to post it up on Facebook because I knew that I was going to get ridiculed for it. Because of the amount I go on about them all the time. But I posted up, does anyone have this? I don't know where it is. And I have had 3 people email me saying, is it this pedal? And I'm like, oh, no, that's another one of my pedals that you've got that I've lent to you. It's not the one.
What's still out?
Mojo.
Yeah, I know where that is.
I know that is as well. And RC20.
Who's got that?
My friend Jack, who plays in that band Bird Skulls.
What's the RC20?
Loop Station.
The prior RC30. Jack, who plays in that band Bird Skulls.
Okay.
My friend Dee has got my Hall of Fame. And there's something else which I can't remember right now. But I don't know what it is. I assume it must be in a box in my parents' house.
It was from it's definitely in your house.
No. Because the box is there.
No, because there's a picture on my phone in your flat where I put the RE20 on your coffee table and took a picture of it. It's definitely in your house.
Really?
Unless you've loaned it out to someone. I have photographic evidence that it is there.
Ah, cool.
We're going to have to go looking for it.
Well, yeah, I'm going there.
We're going to go watch True Detective in a minute. Thanks. That's really reassuring.
It's there somewhere, cool. Definitely. Unless someone's come in your house and stolen it.
I've got to be honest, I think...
In fact, when you put up a photo of an RC30 and your other Supersonic 22, wasn't it plugged in then?
No, because I couldn't... that's when I realised that it was missing.
It's definitely in your house.
Cool.
Somewhere. Joe Branton, what have you been up to?
I'm buying another bass.
Are you?
I know. It's got bad.
Didn't we talk about this last week?
No.
No, it was the week before because I listened to this one.
Why?
Because I really like ESP basses.
Okay. So you've got the fretless?
Yeah, well, that's on its way to me.
Okay.
Wait, you're buying a fretless?
Fretless, yeah. ESP, PJ.
So ESP do a really great range of like precision bass style of sort of Fender style basses.
Do you know who else does a really good range of?
No, but this is the point. They don't. Not
right,
they,
okay.
Like Fender do great classic basses. I really like, and I have my favourite bass that I own is probably the 50s reissue P bass, and I really like that. And I really like the Geddy Lee that I've got, and I really like the Bass 6. I like those things are really good that Fender do, like the old style, sort of 70s style, 60s style bass is great.
You're getting paid too much, mate.
The modern stuff.
We pay you too much for this.
So what you're saying is the 50s style, great. 60s style, great. 70s style, great.
But that's it.
Dot, dot, dot. Okay.
I don't like their modern stuff as much. And
what modern stuff do they do? Well, everything's just derivative of those three things.
Well, American Standard?
American Standard, American Special, and the Mexican Standard.
Yeah.
If I want a modern sounding Fender, I don't want to spend... I don't think American Standards are worth £1,000.
You're crazy.
They definitely are.
No, they're just so average, though. I want something with an edge... And
the edge.
They just have... Yeah, they
get
just
the
have
Adam Clayton signature.
That was actually a really good jazz bass, the Clayton signature.
It was. They don't make it anymore because he's gone back to Warwick.
I know, yeah.
We had this conversation fairly recently.
Ridiculous. What a ridiculous man. What a crap band. Anyway, I found a really like ESP bass. It was only when I AB'd the Vintage Modified Precision Bass that Squire do and the ESP LTD Vintage 204 fretless that I realised how substantially better the LGD was for the same money. And so I was like, oh yeah, that's really good. I've ordered that. And then, just because I was looking on the ESP website, I found that they do a...
EX-104 Explorer?
No, they do a Gabe Crisp signature model. Gabe Crisp.
That's not a name.
Gabe Crisp, the well-known bass player from well-known and popular band Whitechapel.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, they're like a...
Gabe Crisp.
Metal-y sort of band.
Anyway, so... What is
they
the
do
Gabe
a Gabe Crisp?
Crisp.
It's a precision style bass. Okay, look, here's the thing. I'm going into the studio in a couple of weeks, and
you're really lacking on basses for all the tones you need.
Yeah, well, basically, the record that I'm recording in the studio is all in D standard, and I don't own anything that's through body strung. And
what about your Yamahas?
No, because I've sold the 424, which is through body strung. The Billy Sheehan's not.
Okay.
So I don't own anything through body. So anything that
what
I put in
the 70s
D standard.
One? What? What about the 70s one?
No, that's not through body. Okay. And also it's missing half of a 11th fret as well. So it's not so usable on the high
How
end.
How did that happen?
It just came like that. It's just basically flattened into the body.
Oh, okay.
So that's not an option.
That's how they did them in the 70s.
Yeah, exactly.
Fretless wonder.
So I needed something that I can down-tune to D standard and it be okay there. So I was looking for sort of... like, the 50s won't really do it, the 50s P-bass, and I wanted something that had P-bass pickup. So I discovered the Gabe Crisp GC P4 signature model, which is
absolute
a
P4. Free
body strung precision bass in black with a black scratch, with a black matching headstock, which is damn cool, and a maple neck with no inlays, so it looks wicked. And a PJ
no inlays
pickup.
At all?
No, so it's just like a plain maple neck.
Weird.
Like the way Warwick used to do their basses.
Yeah.
And that with a PJ pickup format. And I was like, yeah, that's a winner. And it's just under £500. So I got hold of ESP today and...
Have you actually ordered one?
Not yet, because they haven't got back to me yet as to whether or not they have one in the country.
They definitely don't import the Gabe Crisp.
If they have a Gabe Crisp, I'm buying a Gabe Crisp. So yeah,
the more you say it, the weirder it sounds.
What, a Gabe Crisp? That's my Gabe Crisp.
I reckon
my Gabe Crisp.
They've got a little alarm bell in the office. Someone's ordered a Gabe Crisp.
Yeah, it's wicked. I'm really excited about the Gabe Crisp.
Sound the klaxon.
400mm fretboard radius. Ridiculously flat.
Okay.
For a bass. That's unusual.
400 mil.
It's 12 inch, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
Okay, you're mental.
Is it?
So I'm excited about this.
Is it 12 inch radius?
Yeah, and it's designed for...
Yeah, 400 mil, because it's 40 centimetres,
isn't
it? Yeah.
And it's designed for, like, drop tuning and stuff, you know, with that in mind, because, of course, he does, so I'm...
Of course he does.
It will be perfect.
Which
for my requirements.
Which Whitechapel album is that from?
You know, the most recent one, I imagine.
Any other news?
No, that is about it. I think that's me done.
Good. I've got some news.
Go on.
It was my birthday this week.
Oh, God, no one cares.
They
All
do
you've
care.
Done is going on about
I'll
this.
I'll tell you why they care. It's because my pedal board is finally finished.
No, it isn't.
It is. I've got the Echoplex preamp for my birthday.
You've still got a wah pedal on your pedal board.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I'm leaving it there.
Oh, why?
I mean, I hardly ever use it, but...
It's
so good. All the pedals on there, apart from the wah, I'm pretty much leaving on all the time. Echoplex preamp, Soul Food, Alter Ego, Strymon Flint, Looper.
Go on, just try and remember them all. You've only got six to remember here.
You're leaving that on all the time.
Not the Ditter Loop. Well, it depends on doing a loop. Then it is on all the time. It sounds amazing. The Echoplex, we just plugged it in briefly before we started podding. The Echoplex makes a massive difference,
doesn't
it?
It does make a big difference,
yeah,
even at low volumes, yeah. Really
it
does.
Kind of, when you turn it off, it sounds like you've got old strings on your guitar, which I probably have. But then you turn it on, everything sounds great. Just drives it, a bit more top end. Really nice.
Really good. I'm surprised it made a difference even on your little crappy Hughes & Kettner 5-watt thing.
What the main difference it makes is the Hughes & Kettner's quite flat. in terms of response, it's not a particularly vibey amp, and putting that in there makes it sound super cool.
Wow, so it's just like buying a decent amp.
Yeah. No, the Tube Meister is fine if you don't want anything too vibey.
Right.
If you want something very clean and very polite, then it's great. But it's...
if you want that edge.
If you want that edge, Echoplex.
The sort of sound you'd get if you bought a Blues Junior or an
yes.
AC4. Or
yes.
One
or
of the
like
big ones.
If the sort of person who, you know, needs something vibey and therefore sells his Hughes and Kettner to his mate and then buys a Supersonic 22. Yeah. That sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Sweet, great mates. No, the difference being is that it's controllable volume-wise, which
yeah,
a Blues Junior is
no,
not.
No, 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 I agree.
No, yeah.
And it stays fair. The good thing about it being quite like flat sounding is that it doesn't really change character that much when
no.
you have it all the way down.
It
or
actually
all the way
sounded
up.
Great at low volumes.
Yeah, completely.
And you play it, I mean, I know we're in a flat, but you play it at a ridiculously considerate volume.
I'm nice. I'm a nice guy. The neighbours, you know, I'm being nice. And I couldn't do that with the Blues Junior. No,
no
way. What
no.
I'd have to do is put something in the front end and turn the volume down. So the way I have it at the moment, like the Soul Food is like flat out and the Echoplex is flat out and then the amp's backed off quite considerably. Whereas if it was a Blues Junior, I'd have to back all the pedals off so that I could turn the amp up a bit, which I think is a worse way round. Try and get as much signal in the front end as possible.
Yeah,
sounds good.
So that's what you got.
I'm finally done, I think. Maybe I want to get a Diogo Patch Factory because at the moment it's looking like a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
And also, I realised that I only own one guitar lead that is of any decent length, so plugging it all in was a bit of a problem.
Right.
Bit of a noise, because the one that was going from the looper into the amp was like a metre long, and I
right.
needed that to wire the rest of the things up, and then I was like, oh, okay, I'll plug it in. No, I've only got one guitar lead. But I found another one that will do the job, I suppose. Yeah, my pedal board's
done. I know
done.
Somewhere Sweet. Where you can buy one of them.
Yeah, I used to as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, pedal board done. Super happy.
Awesome.
I kind of want to get another guitar now though. That's the problem.
Definitely.
That's the problem.
Buy some more guitars.
You don't have a telly.
God, I need to
That's
stop.
That's the problem.
I might sell the pink Aria.
Buy a telly.
I kind of do want to buy a telly.
You need a telly.
Tellies are the best. I need to get one. Anyway, so that's the news from our end. But there's been some news from the world of guitars. Should we dive in some news?
Newt.
So first up, the Diogo have just announced the Sprinter, talking of pedal boards. The Sprinter is designed for micro pedals. The photo that they put up, I think it had like 6 Moors on it.
Bit late to the punch, aren't they, really?
Well,
Pedal Train have done one for some time.
Yeah, yeah. But it's Pedal Train, so you can't get a
you
hold
can't
of
actually
them.
Get it. Yeah,
can't
yeah,
buy one.
Really
so, yeah, the mock-up on
how,
the
How
the
do Pedal Train stay afloat as a company? Like, I don't understand how you could just not make anything for people to use for, like, 6 months. I mean, when they made the decision to redesign everything, why didn't they make enough stuff to carry on selling first, like most companies do when they change over? Why did they just stop? Like, they're literally not a company and haven't been for 6 months.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question.
It's the craziest business decision ever.
Surely they just racked up a big sort of like war chest of money and then went, okay, right.
Well, I guess so. And the fact is that people are still waiting for them because they are the best. But
yeah.
It was just such... You have to be incredibly confident to make that decision, to annoy people enough that you can't buy their product for 6 months.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, I suppose.
It
but I mean, maybe did they just try and do it and then went, actually, there's a manufacturing error or
I don't think.
Like,
I think they just went, yeah, we're going to be doing. Because they announced it at NAMM.
Yeah.
And they just went.
And we haven't seen any of the new ones yet.
No, none at all. None at all.
It is quite weird, isn't
and
it?
And I guess the thing is, I mean, partly they announced. I feel like if it was me that was in charge of that company, you probably just wouldn't have announced it. Because you can understand it. If they announced, right, we're completely redesigning our line, why then would not only the consumers, but any of the suppliers or the retail outlets say, yeah, cool, we'll take some of this old stuff that you're discontinuing and we won't be able to get a hold of any, you know, for any sort of long period of time. And you're
yeah.
also definitely not marketing to anybody and
yeah.
this, that and the other. You know, so it was probably 6 of 1 and a half dozen of the other. Do you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like,
there
just
is a bit don't of, announce it.
Well, there's a bit
well,
of a rush, isn't there, just to get stuff out at NAMM generally. Like,
yeah.
we usually hear stuff, and sometimes stuff doesn't arrive until...
What, for like 6 months?
Well, yeah.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Yeah, 6 months. Or sometimes, like, you know, in the case of some Pigtronic stuff, didn't arrive, or ZFX, some stuff didn't arrive for 2 years.
Yeah. Orange as well. Orange have announced stuff that hasn't ever actually hit production.
That's true.
Man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think it's, it's just a case of get your announcements out there. I would imagine, particularly for the big companies, because if they're floated, then their investors are waiting to hear announcements.
Yeah, yeah. Pedaltrain also, I don't think, whilst they have kept everything very much to themselves and we don't know the details of it, dates have been being pushed back from them. So I figure everything hasn't gone 100% to plan with when they wanted to put these pedal boards out.
I mean, how hard can it be? They're just aluminium.
Yeah, you are literally slightly redesigning the slats so that Moore pedals can fit on. And yeah, it has taken 6 months and still no releases on any of the information on it.
So the Diago Sprinter is a compact, I think it might be ABS plastic. It's in a gig bag and it's literally just tall enough for Moore pedals.
They already have
the commuter.
The commuter, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is essentially a piece of plywood with Velcro on it in a bag.
Well, yeah. I think this might be even cheaper than that then. I didn't see a price, but yeah, I think it might be a plastic board in a gig bag.
Because the commuter, I think, is about, I think it might be £35 or something like that.
This might even be cheaper than that.
How can you do it cheaper than that? It's
crazy. Make it out of plastic rather than wood.
You do it £20.
Yeah.
But like, even a bag is...
Yeah, true, yeah. True. But it looked cool, actually. It looked like if you've just got a collection of Moore pedals or you want something to
or
go
I guess,
and do...
you know, if, like, you know, you, a year ago, and you only had, for example, like, a Sans Amp and a tuner, it's probably big enough.
Ideal. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think they're going to do all right because people are... You know, there's loads of new mini pedals out, Tone City or whatever they're called as well. People are really going for it. One big bit of news this week: Sewell guitars sold for $11 million.
$11 million.
To a kind of a technology firm.
And, yeah, what is that about?
Seem like their biggest thing that they do at the moment is vape.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah. Do some.
Is okay. Here's one for you. Is that doesn't seem, that can't be the whole company, because that doesn't seem like enough money.
I think it was the whole company.
That really doesn't seem like a lot of money. You know, $11 million, you know, is a fair chunk of money.
But in comparison to a footballer's wages.
Well, I mean, not even that. You know, just think about, like, so those guitar, you know, how much were those Guthrie Govans when they were
doing? They were $11 million. Well,
but they were what? They were probably a couple of grand each, right? You know, they're probably more. I think the Charvels were a couple of grand, so the Sears were probably a bit more.
Right.
You know, if they did... I mean, I don't know. Just even with all of the held stock that they must have, that must equate to a fair chunk of that.
Yeah,
so it
true.
Just doesn't seem like a huge amount of money. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the figures. I don't really know how many
they
guitars...
They are such a boutique company, though.
I can tell you some figures, actually, from the press release. So this is reading directly from the press release. Avalanche International Corporation announced today that it has agreed to purchase JS Technologies Inc., maker of the world-renowned Sur and other branded musical instruments and electronics, for $11 million in stock and cash. The 18-year-old US manufacturer of high-end musical instruments and electronics based in Lake Elsinore, California, has annual revenues of over $10 million, which doesn't seem like that much to me.
I mean, if
it's not as much as I imagined.
No, but if they're, but that's what I'm saying. If they're, you know, they're, and their revenues are $10 million a year, and they've sold the company for $11 million.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. Is it doesn't seem like.
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know. What they are saying though is that John Sir and Steve Smith, who are the guys basically, yeah, are staying on for an undetermined period, so they will still be there, but the company will be owned by Avalanche International.
You can just, that is going to go sour so quickly.
Well, you never know. You never know.
No, because they'll have restrictions put on their manufacturer that they've never had put on them before. This company will be trying to turn Sur into a major brand rather than the boutique brand, or at least a brand, a production line brand rather than a boutique brand, and those will be restrictions that.
They did it. Sur had some. I think they had some cheaper made guitars, didn't they? At one point, the name of Rasmus was what they were called. I think they were maybe Korean. Okay. So they have tried to kind of expand into a kind of bigger.
I've been watching.
That I could see you then thinking.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what you were doing there.
So they have tried to do it before, and I just wonder whether they're finding that they couldn't like take the next step, and I guess like finding investment is the. Is
well,
the way to go.
I hope it's good.
Yeah, same.
I hope so too. It'd be cool if it was a big brand. You know.
I've always struggled to be able to justify the price points that Sur guitars come in. I find it difficult to accept modular spec guitars past a certain price point.
You need a through neck.
I just need something that's not actually just a Fender sort of.
I mean, I would think that they would maybe disagree that that's what the,
I know,
the Sur
I know,
guitar
I know
is.
It is. I know they are really, really sort of high-endy boutique-y things, but they don't have any.
I know what you mean. It's a neck bolted onto a body.
Yeah, made out of the same woods.
But then people could say that about Fender Custom Shop, you know. It's,
That's true. But you're paying for. I guess you're paying for the people that build it with Fender Custom Shop.
Yeah, but that's the same with Sur.
Yeah.
Ah, no, they just don't look as good, though.
Basically, what you're saying is you don't like how they look.
No,
so
it's essentially, at a distance, I think you can confuse Sur with Stag. And that is... I'm just saying, at a distance, I think that is true.
Jeez Louise.
Obviously, I know that spec-wise,
shots
there
fired.
Is a big... there is obviously a
very
massive
very rarely
difference.
Does Joe backpedal. And yeah. This is
I don't think I've ever seen him backpedal
look
on a ridiculous
that. Look
statement.
Look how red he's gone.
I'm not backpedaling. They look cheap. That's where I'm laying down the line. Sur guitars look cheap.
Well, if you just made an $11 million investment in listening to this podcast, then, you know, heed
please
those
don't.
Words.
Joe does not.
Joe
the
does
views
not.
Expressed here are Joe's and Joe's alone, and do not represent the Guitar Nerds Corporation or any other corporations we may be associated with.
At Joseph_900.
Yeah, fine.
I think Sur guitars look wicked. Like in particular, the Guthrie stuff looked amazing. But yeah, you know, each to their own, and that's what's so great about guitars. One last bit of news. Bare Knuckle announced the Cobra T bladed tele pickup. It's a super high output single coil that looks like a stacked humbucker. They did a strap version, I think, and now they've adjusted it for teles.
It looks like a stacked humbucker, but it's bladed.
It looks like a blade, you know, like the hot rails.
Yeah.
But it's single coil.
Right, I see.
And yeah, it's apparently super high output. Great if you want kind of a bit of extra aggressive twang for your telly. Bare Knuckle just rocking out, aren't they? Like, they're just still going.
Yeah.
Do you remember when they just did the ridiculous ones?
The nail bomb pig and the nail bomb.
Like,
and the...
covered, that looked like it was covered in mud.
Yeah.
That was so dumb. And now they make some really good stuff.
Irish Tour.
Yeah.
Or the Blackguard stuff. They do, yeah, it's all rocking, isn't it?
It is. Should we dive in some questions?
Why not?
Let's do it. So Chris says, anyone had any experiences with the Fender USA Deluxe Tellies? Quite fancying one right now. Love the finish on them and like the idea of the S1 switching. Jay Cross, you probably had most hands-on experience with the Deluxe Telly.
Yes. So I like them. I guess part of me finds it... If the S1 switching is certainly the big thing, I think, yeah, with those guitars. I think... I kind of find it difficult to justify the price point that they're at, because they're maybe, you know, a couple of hundred quid, probably not even that much more than an American standard. And since 2012, when Fender put redesigned the standard series and put the custom shop pickups in there, I think they are just like, it's such a cut above what they were before.
Yeah.
And with the prices of all the American vintage stuff seemingly coming down, you know, you can get...
Are the prices coming down?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I was looking at it this week and everything seems a lot cheaper than it always was.
Okay.
You know, like the... I seem to remember that for example, the American Vintage Jazzmasters were like... They used to be like 1,700
yeah,
quid.
Yeah.
Like, you can get one now for like 14.
Really?
13, okay. 14. And so all the American Vintage... And I think that's good because it was difficult to justify why you would buy an American Vintage guitar when, for an extra couple of hundred quid... You could get a custom shop.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the problem that the Deluxes have placed themselves in at the moment, is that now the American Vintage stuff has come down. So you can get a really cool, high-spec reissue guitar for 1,400 quid or so. You've got the standards, which are a great sort of, you know, benchmark for 1,100 quid. And then the Deluxes kind of sit here, you know, sort of neither here nor there.
Yeah.
I'm personally not a huge fan of the noiseless pickups. I think they can sound a little bit too clinical. But, you know, I don't really care about intonation and I like it to be really raucous and horrible. So, you know, draw from that what you will. The bridges are excellent. They're the Deluxe...
They are really good.
The bridges are really, really good. They're better than the bridges on anything else. You know, if what you want is real precise intonation, they're really, really good. They've got locking tuners, which are just so easy to use, and they just don't go out of tune. And they've also got the contoured heel as well as the S1 switching, yep, which is really nice.
And they're top bound.
And not all of them are. Are all of them?
You retracted that almost as quickly as you said it.
I guess they are all...
Yeah, some of them are white binding, and some of them are purloined.
Oh, God.
Not purloined.
There's a shell. There's a candy apple one, which isn't, I think.
Okay.
But, yeah, I think out of all of them, the one I would go for is the American Deluxe Thin Line. I think that, what with it being... okay. What with it having the F-hole there, I think it just adds a little something, which...
Doesn't really change the tone, does it, particularly? Vintage
noiseless. I don't know. Well, they're not vintage noiseless. They're noiseless.
The SCNs, yeah.
And I think having the F-hole there just really, like, gives you just a little bit more resonance, a little bit more character, which, for me, I felt, as I say, I find it difficult to look past the noiseless pickups. I'm not a huge fan of them, and I really like the pickups that you get in the standards. And then, you know, it's not a huge amount more for one of the American Vintage. We've got an amazing where I work at the moment. We've got this amazing 64, there's some of the American Vintage stuff that looks really, really good.
So what we're saying is basically, if you want a very modern guitar with the
very, very modern player's guitar. Precise with the tuning. You're not going to deviate too much from the set. You know, because a lot of the time with single coils is you can plug them in two different places and they will sound completely different.
Yep.
You know, that just is kind of the nature of them. But yeah, having the those noiseless pickups, you do get a very consistent sound.
Yeah.
I think they're very, very good if you're doing a lot of home recording. Because you can get that real clinical sound. But yeah, the S1 is excellent. I think the S1 is a really, really interesting combination, although I think probably if it was me, I would swap it out for a four-way switch, so you could have the
you could have the...
so you're Baja switching, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Someone mentioned the other day that we don't say Baja telly enough anymore.
Really?
So yeah, Baja telly. There we go, take a drink. Do you know what? I really shouldn't like it, but because it's not something that I would normally like, but the American Deluxe telly in Olympic Pearl with the tortoiseshell binding is one of the best guitars, guitars that Fender make.
They do the... that's the one that I would go for with the F-hole.
In the thin line.
Yeah. I think that just looks absolutely amazing.
Yeah. So, Richard says, which album was your defining guitar moment growing up? Joe Branton. I guess it'd be Bass Moment.
It's going to be...
It's going to be something rubbish is why you're looking at me like that.
No,
it definitely is, isn't it? It definitely is.
I hate that band.
Joe Brennan. Yeah, my name is Joe Brennan and I bought Origin of Symmetry and now I want to be like Matt Bellamy, but I need to play the bass.
The guy whose name no one knows.
What's his name?
I
definitely know it.
I don't know his name. I hate that band. probably they only do this because they know how much I hate Muse with every fibre of my soul.
Go on, tell us what was your defining bass moment.
It would have been Enema of the State, I imagine.
Classic.
Yeah, by Blink-182. I distinctly remember as a kid listening to it on massive over ear headphones through my CD Walkman in bed.
Nice.
A couple of weeks after I bought my first bass and thinking, how the hell am I going to play these bass lines?
There's quite a lot of bass on that album, isn't there? Quite a lot of bass playing.
Mutt. Do you remember the song Mutt? That has its proper sort of lead bass hook in there. But just at the time I couldn't fathom it. Of course now it would be considered quite basic, I guess. But yeah. At the time,
what's the fast song on that record?
Party song.
The party song, yeah. I remember the first time I heard that song, I was like,
music can't be this fast.
How is music this fast?
I mean, to be fair, it's not very well played, so it does sound weird and quite rubbish, but yeah. Jay Cross, what's your moment?
I think on a similar sort of vibe, I think it's probably
All Killer No Filler, Sum 41.
Americana.
Okay.
Actually, by The Offspring. I remember the first time that I played, when I finally learned how to play The Kids Aren't Alright.
That was such a tune.
Except for the solo on that. Except for the solo, which I probably still can't play.
It's just a scale.
Like a reptile?
The cheese.
On a fanatic. The first time I played that the whole way through, I just remember being like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Such a good album. Probably their best one.
Mark Packham?
Defining guitar moment. Do you know what I really...
Yours is probably a bass moment.
Maybe. Just like Beatles. Beatles is when I went, because before that I was obsessed with Michael Jackson, like as a kid. I was obsessed with Michael Jackson records. I was like, it's so good. And I, but it's all like pop and that. And although there's quite a lot of guitar stuff in that. And then I heard the Beatles and I was like, okay, well, I could probably just do this then. They just were like four lads. I could probably do guitar and that. Like, yeah. So that's probably my defining guitar moment. Beatles at the BBC, weirdly, which is the...
That's their best album.
Definitely not. But I bought it on cassette from my granddad and like listened to it. And I was like, these tunes are wicked. And there's loads of guitar on it. There's loads of George playing solos because it's near the beginning and that. Anyway, Rob, this is a very similar, kind of a similar question. Rob says, when my daughter suggests Scott Pilgrim as the film of choice for the evening, you know you've done a good job. Any other top films with the guitars that my fellow nerds can recommend? We talked about this maybe a couple of years ago, didn't we, on the old podcast?
God,
Talk about guitar movies.
Yeah, you definitely spoke about the Aria guitar used by Marty McFly.
Yeah,
I mean that film is full of cool guitar moments in it.
Yeah. If you look at the name of the settings on the amplifier that Marty McFly is turning up to play,
they're hilarious, aren't they?
They're amazing. It's like primary driver.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, and he's just turning them all up to full.
My favourite moment in that film is the bit where when he's playing the solo
at the when he's playing the solo at the end.
Yeah.
And the fella in the band who was the guitarist, who
Marvin Berry,
and he runs up to the phone and goes, "Hey Chuck, it's your cousin, Marvin Berry." It's just,
oh yeah, that's such a good moment.
So
my,
good.
My favourite moment about the mini guitar at the start is that he turns everything up on full and then plugs the jack lead.
Yeah, there's no feedback. It doesn't make any sense. And there's no like as he plugs the jack in, just suddenly really loud. It's so dumb. Joe Bratton, any other guitar movies? Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Well, Bill and Ted's Excellent
kind of
Adventure
guitar
is
based,
a good one. I would always go for Scott Pilgrim just because it's a bass one. Yeah, it has
it
a bass
kind
off
of a bass
that
movie.
So yeah, I would kind of default to that. Yeah, that was pretty good. You know, The Wedding Singer.
Wedding Singer has got some great...
You got some classic, like, Cure style.
It's Steve Buscemi in that. It's it's just amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Self-taught, no lessons. Thanks, Pop. He's great. I would say maybe, I don't know how old Rob's daughter is, but maybe just watch Anvil, which is one of the greatest films ever.
I tell you another thing that I thought was quite good is in that film, there's that Will Ferrell film.
Stepbrothers?
No, there's the film that
Night
he
of the
did
Roxy.
With Maggie Gyllenhaal. Where he plays
Stranger
an auditor.
Than Fiction.
No, it's not Stranger Than Fiction.
She's
it's,
in that though, right?
Is it Stranger Than Fiction?
Where
no,
can,
it's not Stranger Than
he
Fiction.
He can hear the woman narrating his life.
No, it's not that.
She
one.
Works in a cupcake shop. It is Stranger Than Fiction.
Is it Stranger Than Fiction? Okay, maybe it's maybe it's
he goes
Stranger
into a music shop.
He's a he's an auditor. Yeah, it is, yeah, and he goes. He's like, she's like cool and rock and roll, and she works in this bakery. And he's like a complete square and falls in love with her. And then there's this whole part in the film where he's trying to like learn how to play guitar to like impress her. And it was like, yeah, that's actually quite sweet. That's like how, you know, anyone, they do a good job of showing him learning to play guitar. And if you like really persist with it,
yeah,
it's, you know, you can actually, it doesn't really matter that you've never played or that you're a complete square. If you want to do it,
the Jay Cross story,
you can definitely hook
absolutely.
Up with hot girls.
Maggie Gyllenhaal. Yeah. That's why, and also, yeah, I didn't tell my girlfriend at the time, but that is why I wanted to call our cat Maggie, because after I saw that film, I was really in love with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
I see.
There we go. Turns out your cat's really annoying and everyone hates her.
On a contemporary movie note, movies with guitars and that, the new Mad Max film.
Oh, it's got a guitar? It's got a guy playing guitar on the front of a truck.
Yeah, that's right. He's got a flying V.
That
actually he is, I can't remember his name, unfortunately, but
Guitar Ross Maximos.
I was watching the press conference, and he is a famous Australian guitarist in
really?
Sort of a relatively well known Australian band. And
Friends
of
Rom.
He actually has a guitar that shoots flame.
Amazing.
They were going to CGI it, and some of it is obviously CGI'd, but he was like,
he was like, no, don't worry, lads, I've got one.
Yeah, so
I'll bring my own.
So he genuinely does have a flying V that shoots flame.
Is it Tim Wheeler from Ash?
Probably, yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was amazing.
And Tim Wheeler set himself on fire. And burnt to death on stage.
He didn't burn to death
on stage. No, that was just in my dreams.
Imagine, what's wrong with you? Ash are a great band.
Imagine getting that guitar through customs. Sir, would you mind just opening this case? And he's like, bear with me. They're like, yeah, this appears to be... Is this a guitar that is also a flamethrower? And he's like, only with the low register. It's fine, don't worry.
Yeah, I hit a very special button. It's fine. Just put it in the hole. I'm not taking this one in the cabin. Not allowed. Adam says, unearth the Demarzio Very Metal when tidying up this afternoon. Yes, Demarzio made pedals once upon a time. And yes, all of the knobs go to 11. It goes one louder. That brings us back to the guitar movies. Any old or unusual pedals that you guys are rocking? Joe Brandon, have you got anything weird on the board?
I'm afraid don't. My board is very, very...
conservative.
Yeah, it's pretty sensible.
Bit boring.
You? Yeah, I don't have anything sort of interesting, weird or old. In fact, I mean, I'm a bass player, so most of my pedals
are just weird
quite
and old.
Recent anyway. No, I'm afraid not. J. Cross?
Yeah, I do. I've got the my harmonic percolator, don't I?
Oh, of course.
Is that old though, or is it?
It's I don't know how old it is. I think it's 70s.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the percolators were 70s.
I was just quickly looking up.
No, you'll never find it because there have been a million
copies of it. I know.
Yeah.
You carry on, Mark, and I'll...
Well, I was just going to say, we've just talked about my pedal setup and I actually don't have anything old or weird. I'll tell you the one thing that I definitely... If I see one, I will just buy it straight away, is... a Russian Big Muff in the
love
black
a Russian
box. Because that I did have one of those back in the day, and like I've kind of decided that I don't like fuzz at all, but if I had one of those I would definitely buy it. And I'd probably actually use it on bass. That's kind of the only it's kind of the only old and weird pedal that I'm looking for, either a black box Big Muff or the green box Russian Big Muff. That's the one that Matt thingy used in Weezer.
This just says that this was early 70s and there's not very many of them.
Really? I mean, I thought it was like a 90s.
No, definitely early 70s. Okay. Yeah. I mean, on kind of note of weird old pedals, if you're after like something weird, unusual and old, I think there are some great little boutique...
Here's your phone number.
Here's my phone number. There are some really great like boutique companies that will do sort of weird little reissues. We've mentioned them before, but both Gajira pedals in Scotland are really good for tapping up for really unusual reissues. I've got a Meat Boy and a something else, some other really weird fuzz that I can't remember the name of, made by them with custom art on it, and also in Brighton, Third Eye Pedals, who I think are really good, who made my band a signature pedal, which is pretty cool. It's sort of to our specs, but they also do like they've offered to make me a harmonic percolator because I can't get Jay to sell his. So I'm probably going to tap them up for that, but a really good pedal brand, just
if you want something weird.
Yeah, something weird and unusual. Like most of the stuff they do is really odd, unusual stuff. You should check out their Facebook page, Third Eye Pedals. It's just full of
Joe gets
really
a fiver every time you go
stuff.
There.
Yeah, I do. No, I don't.
you can borrow my harmonic percolator to record.
Stop lending out pedals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you want to borrow it to record with, you can.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It doesn't have a PSU input. You've got to run it off batteries, but I've got a battery converter for my
sweet.
So that's there. But yeah, you can use that if you want.
Oh yeah, thanks. I may well tap you up for that.
Yeah,
thank you.
Fine.
And with that, I think we'll wrap it up.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for listening. Thank you so much, as always, to our extra Patreon backers. That is Phil Thompson.
Whoa, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah, you're doing
what
it in a weird
doing?
Voice, aren't you?
We agreed
okay.
this.
Thanks to our Patreon backers, who are...
I haven't thought about what voices now.
Oh,
just gonna.
Geez,
I might just go for them all in one voice. Do a different voice each week. Otherwise, I've got to think of like five
just
every week.
Okay, just think about that for a second. So we're patreon.com/guitarnerds. Helps you, you can go there and help us out by supporting the show on a kind of monthly basis. And if you go for our top tier, you become one of our executive producers, and Joe will read your voice out. Read your voice out? Read your name out? Thusly.
Aren't you doing backing music for me?
No.
I'm not doing it with that.
Phil Thompson. Colin Anderson. No, John Allen. Fletcher. Matt Quan.
Joe loves Muse. Thanks so much for backing us this month. If you've backed us in this month, if you backed us in June, then you'll go on to the next month's podcasts list. Just thanks for helping us out. It helps us kind of do this podcast and get it up, and helps with the hosting and all that. You're right.
Yeah. All right.
facebook.com/groups/guitarnerdsforum. On
you just said it.
Don't Twitter.
Don't worry about it.
Okay, carry on.
Did I say it helps us get it up?
Yeah.
Brilliant. I mean, Sometimes. At Guitar Nerds on Twitter, at Guitar Nerds on Instagram, guitarnerds.net for all the breaking news from the guitar world. And yeah, thanks very much for listening and helping us get it up. I'm at Mark_random on Twitter.
I'm at Yosef_900 on Twitter.
I'm at JAYBM1 on Instagram. Twitter.
We're going to go and do the Patreon episode now, so if you are a Patreon backer, the more of this nonsense. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Bye.
What I can think of is Beefy Botham.
Oh. Never the Botham.
It's just in there now.
Pardon?
Bow. I can't unsee Beefy Botham.
That's the end of the podcast.